The final edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for audiences who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Hello, I'm Jeff Chrysler, and I'm fake Tony Hendra. It's the end of summer, and a young man's fancy turns to, well, the love he didn't get all summer long. Right, and that lack of love, let's call it what it is, sexual frustration. It sounds like something you'd put on the Barbie with some shrimp. Don't just get on with it. Everyone knows you can't do an accent. You're the brains, not the talent behind this operation. This sexual frustration leads him to join the local chapter of the Angry Men with Backed Up Sperm Association, the AMBUPS, AMBUPS. They're a very dangerous organization. Yes, sir. In fact, AMBUPS chapters come in all forms. Midwestern police departments, anti-immigration rallies, Russian leadership meetings, terrorist cabals, the TSA, and of course, Fox News Network. Luckily, we've placed our operatives deep inside these organizations in order to report what's really happening. And we sort of do that for all of you tonight. Sort of. Plus, we've got obituaries, corporate personhood, hump trucks, and of course, duck faces. Duck what's? It doesn't matter, Tony. Please, everyone, sit back, relax, and for the final time this sort of official summer, thanks Labor Day, enjoy the final edition Radio Hour.
Hello, I am ordinary Russian citizen President Vladimir Putin. Recently, we find out someone invading our nice neighbor Ukraine, and we are all wondering, who is invading Ukraine? People are asking us who is invading Ukraine. We ask Ukraine, who is invading you? No one knows. It's mystery. So, we try to figure out who is real invader. Here is what we find so far. Invader speaks Russian, is using Russian weapons, is having training from Russian army. So, could be anyone. Brazil is example. Just kind of thing Brazil does. Invades countries while speaking Russian. So now in Russia, we are organizing army to go into Ukraine to find out who is organizing army to go into Ukraine. It's probably teenagers.
Welcome to This Week in Ferguson. Civil libertarians have requested an autopsy of the First Amendment, which they say was shot at point-blank range by police officers. The final edition takes you there now, where the autopsy is in progress.
As you can see, the body of this amendment has six holes of varying sizes. The first two are in the upper thorax, where it says Congress shall make no law establishing freedom of speech. That has been all but obliterated.
These wounds actually build on previous damage caused by police during Occupy Wall Street, several Republican and Democratic conventions, and the WTO protests of 1999.
This section would be unrecognizable to its creators even before Ferguson.
Which brings us to the section below it, freedom of the press.
Ferguson police put holes here, here, and here, by going after reporters and telling them to, quote, get the fuck out.
The amendment guarantees the right to say get the fuck out, but not to make the press actually get the fuck out.
You can see here that the amendment may have struggled, knowing it was under attack by officers sworn to uphold it, but constitutional rights are no match for policemen with more unnecessary firepower than RoboCop 1, 2, 3, and the 2014 reboot.
Which brings us to the lower thorax.
Right. There isn't one.
If you look down here, you'll see the right to peaceably assemble is gone.
The hole is so big, there's no evidence that it was ever there.
I had to look it up on Wikipedia just to confirm its language.
future generations will probably eliminate it from Wikipedia.
Now, while this body has been dead for quite some time, its younger brother,
the Second Amendment,
is alive and well. So if you want to peaceably assemble, just make sure everybody assembling has guns, because you still have the right to open carry.
The Second Amendment is the new First.
If you want First Amendment rights, you'll have to pry them from its cold, dead clauses.
That concludes our autopsy.
We would take questions, but you no longer have the right to ask them.
Join us next time when our story will be whether paid administrative leave is a sufficient deterrent to murder.
And now, the human side of terrorism.
Are you there, Allah? It's me, Mohammed. First off, I want to apologize for taking time out of your busy schedule. I'm sure you have bigger juice to fry, but I have to confess, I have all of these emotions inside of me just waiting to explode, and not in the good way. Today is the big day, Allah. The day that I finally get promoted as Taliban's next suicide bomber. You have no idea how excited I am, Allah. This is such a huge opportunity. But I can't help but wonder, do I really deserve this? Am I ready to take on such an important role? Second wife says I'm overthinking it, that maybe my turban is on too tight. I know women are never supposed to be right, Allah, but I kind of hope she is.
The Final Edition Radio Hour now presents the latest installment of Steve's Adventures with Tech Support. We take you to a cramped, darkened one-bedroom apartment located in Hollywood, California, wherein former Daily Show writer and part-time temporary worker Steve Rosenfield is, yet again, attempting to contact tech support.
Hello!
Oh, great! I got a live person!
Thank you for calling Crap-O Wireless Automated Voice System. To begin, please say or enter your 13-digit account number.
Oh, shit. Where did I put that?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that. Please say or enter your 13-digit account number.
No, wait!
Do you need more time to complete this function? Enter 1 for yes or 2 for no.
Okay, I got the number.
That was not the correct entry. Please enter 1 for yes or 2 for no. You have requested more time to complete this function. Please say or enter your 13-digit account number.
One, two, wait. No, I meant...
I'm sorry, I didn't get that. Please say or enter your 13-digit account number.
Damn it!
It appears you're having difficulty completing this function. You are now being transferred to the next available customer service specialist.
Thank God.
The next customer support specialist will be available in approximately...
4...
Oh, well, that's not too bad.
8 minutes.
No!
Forty-7 minutes and 38 seconds later.
Thank you for calling Crap-O Wireless. This is Tyler. How can I help you?
Yeah, my internet doesn't seem to be working properly. I was hoping you could help me with some troubleshooting stuff.
Is this for your mobile device or your computer?
My computer.
Okay, that's a different department. I'm going to have to transfer you. Hold on.
No, wait! Good evening. I'm Brian Celsius, and this is Viewpoint. Well, the immigration issue has heated up again, and we're very fortunate to have with us tonight Richard Fenko of Edison, New Jersey, who is himself an immigrant. Mr. Fenko, thank you for being on our show.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Brian.
I don't mind telling you, we've been trying to get an immigrant on the show for some time now.
Really? Well, I've been in New Jersey for the last 9 years.
Well, we're very excited, and we have a lot of questions for you. First of all, speaking as an immigrant, is it true that you're shifty?
Brian, I've certainly heard that word used more than once. I can't really answer that question with any objectivity. But I can tell you that I make it my business to look directly at the person with whom I'm speaking so as to create the best possible impression.
Fair enough. And for the record, you do create the impression of being sincere, at least on the surface. I hope I'm not being naive about this, but I feel as though you probably won't pull a knife on me and steal my wallet.
For what it's worth, Brian, I can promise you that I won't pull a knife on you and steal your wallet. I really won't. I don't even own that kind of a knife.
So would it be safe to also assume that later on tonight, while I'm walking to my car, you won't hit me over the head, knocking me unconscious, then go through my pockets while I'm lying on the ground bleeding?
Absolutely not. That would be a horrible thing to do, and I would never think of doing it.
I appreciate your candor, which brings up an issue that surfaces repeatedly, but being a journalist, I must ask it.
I understand.
As an immigrant, can anything you say be trusted?
Well, Brian, that's kind of like the shifty question. My family and friends certainly trust me.
I'm sure they do, Mr. Franco, but as a rule, you all stick together.
We enjoy spending time with each other, Brian, is how I would prefer to say it. And we do celebrate a lot of different holidays together whenever possible.
I don't doubt it, Mr. Franco, although these are holidays many of the rest of us have never heard of and can't even begin to understand. I think that only adds to the confusion.
Well, we do have our own holidays, but we also celebrate Christmas and Thanksgiving and the 4th of July, just like everybody else.
Perhaps, Mr. Franco, but are you celebrating these holidays ironically?
Not that I know of, Brian. Certainly not consciously. To tell you the truth, I've never even seen my relatives being ironic.
Okay, here's an issue that inevitably comes up when the subject is immigration. Is it true that you're not very clean?
Brian, whatever philosophical or political differences we may have, I'd like to think the thing that unites all of us is a desire for plenty of hot water and soap.
Well, let's continue with the issue of personal hygiene. It's summer, the weather is hot, it's muggy. If you were to give off a disagreeable odor, would you say it was simply because you'd worked hard that day, or because you were not that familiar with deodorant?
Well, Brian, let me assure you that I work hard, and I am extremely familiar with deodorant.
Speaking of working hard, Mr. Franco, would you like to take my job away from me?
No, I would never do that, Brian. I'm quite satisfied with the job I have.
So you're not just saying that in order to take my job away from me?
Again, I think we're repeating ourselves with the shifty thing.
Okay, Mr. Franco. So you're living in this country, you're working here. Let's say you meet someone of a similar background and you hit it off. Do the two of you breed like rodents?
Well, Brian, that's a hypothetical because I'm not even married, though I would certainly like to be, and someday I hope to have a family.
Would that be an extremely large, multi-generational family, all living under one roof?
You know, Brian, right now I'm just looking for a nice girl to go out with.
Mr. Franco, are you trying to steal our women?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you for being on the show. I'm Brian Celsius, and this has been Viewpoint.
On-the-job injuries, demand justice.
Medical malpractice, demand justice.
Parents threatening to turn off your cell phone? Demand justice.
Here at the law offices of Jacoby Ashurst and Duckface, we want to see you get the justice you deserve.
Justice for negligence.
Justice for child support.
Justice for getting shushed at a comedy show. What? I'm funny, too.
Auto accident.
Embezzlement.
Your friend of me liking all the fat pics of you on Instagram.
Identity theft.
Fraud.
At work nip slips.
Have you been injured in a car accident?
Have you fallen victim to misleading diet pills?
Ever slipped in your own vom after blowing groceries at your birthday at the Gansevoort?
We're here to help.
We'll guide you through painful divorce proceedings.
We'll hold your hand through harrowing estate settlements.
We're here for you when your feathered Etsy headband falls apart after jumping in that fountain at Bonnaroo.
We're here for you.
Integrity.
Justice.
Oh my God, this peach schnapps is not sitting well.
We are the Transportation Security Administration.
But you probably know us as the people who irradiate your balls.
Every day, airports in every major city flood with passengers trying to fly home to their loved ones, attend business encounters in exotic locations, or desert their families.
We need to protect those innocent people from terrorists who will attempt to board the plane with shampoo and mouthwash.
And that's why we need to irradiate your ball sack before you can board the plane.
We have to x-ray every American to expose all possible weapons and brighten our day with naked pictures of free Americans.
And bombard your balls with deadly radiation to protect future Americans.
Sometimes people ask, if we irradiate your balls, doesn't that kill future Americans?
Well, freedom isn't free.
Your children will have to make sacrifices for the sake of your children.
And your children's children.
Who will also make sacrifices.
Your noseless, mutated offspring will live in a secure nation where jihadists won't grab one of your children's children's children and cut off one of their multiple heads.
That's also why we probe your anus, to prevent trauma.
We search your bags to guard your privacy.
We confiscate your toiletries, to preserve toiletries.
And yes, we repeatedly kick you in the balls. To save the balls.
We are the TSA, the strongest, bravest, most well-trained legion of security professionals that Craigslist could muster.
And now, Jim Earle, author of Morning Remembrance, a collection of mocking obituaries, with this week's tribute to a real dead person, Mitchell Roop, convicted killer who was found to be too fat to hang.
Death row inmate Mitchell Roop, who was once declared by the court to be too fat to execute by hanging, died at the Washington State Penitentiary in Walla Walla after a long battle with a rare liver disease, coincidentally called Walla Walla. After entering prison, Roop gained 80 pounds by eating approximately 6,000 calories a day, or as he liked to call it, fresh meat from Marin. He was twice sentenced to death, but higher courts overturned his sentence when they found he could barely overturn himself. In 1994, a federal judge agreed that he was too obese to hang due to the risk of decapitation. But what really swayed his opinion was all those complaints from PTOR, People for the Ethical Treatment of Rope. According to officials, at the time of his death, Roop weighed 270 pounds, give or take 10 pounds for planted evidence. Relatives say he's now up in heaven jamming with that fat guy from Plan 9 from Outer Space.
For more insensitive, tasteless obituaries, buy Jim's book, Morning Remembrance, at Amazon.com. Remember, morning is spelled with a U, as in U-Tool.
And now, the human side of terrorism.
Are you there, Allah? It's me, Mohammed. I don't mean to complain, but when is it my turn to take a break? I come home after a long day at work, and all I want to do is smoke my hookah and beat my wives in peace. Is that so much to ask? But the second I walk through the door, all I hear is my daughter screaming, "It's my burqa, no! It's my burqa! It's my burqa, no! It's my burqa!" I can't take it anymore, Allah. Now, I don't like to consider myself the kind of guy who stones his kids, but what else am I supposed to do?
Okay, people, come to order. Bartnik, you've had 6 months to come up with some way to increase minority viewership here at Fox News. Mr. Murdoch himself is taking a keen interest in this. What do you have?
Yeah, it involves one of the subsidiary channels, like FXX.
FXX? That's the channel we use to get rid of black people, like that kid with the talk show.
Kamau Bell.
The point was to forget his name, but go on.
Now, we use one of the spare channels to create a Fox News tailored to a black audience. Gentlemen, if you will all watch the monitor, I give you Red Fox News.
Obama, you dummy. You so dumb, you thought your press secretary was supposed to iron your shirts.
Well,
I have a few questions. First, was that a white actor in blackface?
Yeah, I couldn't find a black guy who would do this.
Keep looking. White people cost 40% more. And where did you get actual blackface? They don't sell that stuff. We tried to get some for the entertainment for Mr. Murdoch's birthday, and we couldn't find it.
The blackface was a double layer of John Boehner spray tan?
Well, dial it back a little. There's such a thing as too black, you know?
No problem. After all, the point is the content.
Hey, Hillary, you so dumb, you brought a doobie to a joint session of Congress.
I assume the real Red Fox is dead? What if his estate complains?
We deny any connection. We say that all black people talk like that.
That's racist.
Thank you.
I didn't mean it as a compliment this time. Other people will say it's racist.
Yeah, but boss, it tested well with Fox's youth audience.
The 60 to 75 demographic? Okay, keep tweaking it. But what the network really wants is Hispanic viewers.
I'm way ahead of you. Check it out. Vicente Fox News.
Oh, muy good idea, man. I like that.
Hello, I'm Larry Merkin, former University of Phoenix Juris Doctor graduate and now recent medical graduate from the Caracas Institute of Alternative Medicine. So please call me Dr. Merkin. Anyway, I am here today to directly address our President of the United States, Mr. Barack Obama, about his Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. the Obamacare. I know that I have reached out to you previously on other important matters, Mr. President Barack Obama, and I'm still waiting to hear back from you. However, I, Dr. Larry Merkin, would like to bring to your attention, Mr. President Barack Obama of the United States of America, the matter of alternative medicine not being covered under the current Obamacare. This would also include any individuals receiving health care from shamans, faith healers, witch doctors, and voodoo priests. As a current practitioner of anthroposophic medicine, I feel that it is my duty to the general public to ensure that their needs for alternative medicine are being met through the Obamacare. So please, Mr. President Barack Obama, consider my open plea and the silent plea of America to give every citizen their full rights to health care, no matter how bizarre it seems. Also, if you wish to discuss any other ideas I have for improving your Obamacare, please feel free to contact me at 1-888-MERK-DOC. Seriously, call me this time. I'm here for you and America.
This has been a privately sponsored public service announcement by Larry Merkin. For Larry Merkin, with the written consent of Larry Merkin. Larry Merkin is not a legitimate paid spokesperson, nor does he represent anything or anyone other than himself.
You're listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Hello, help desk.
Yes, I'd like to report something wrong with my country.
Do you have a warranty?
I have a constitution.
Which part of your warranty does this refer to?
Let me see. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 2.
Could you be more specific?
The part where it says Congress shall have the power to declare war?
The War Powers Clause. Are you calling from Westeros or Winterfell?
The United States! Westeros and Winterfell are fantasy places in the Game of Thrones.
From what I'm seeing here, your War Powers Clause is mostly fantasy, too.
Are you saying my constitution is a fiction?
I'm saying that section hasn't been used since World War II. It might have expired.
Congress's ability to declare war doesn't have an expiration date.
Of course not, sir. They just haven't used it in 73 years. Now, what's the problem?
I think we're at war.
What do you mean, war?
An organized, prolonged conflict characterized by extreme violence, social disruption, and economic destruction.
I know what war is, sir. Is your conflict conceptual, actual, or implausible?
I don't know. All three? We're back in Iraq.
Sir, I'm showing that your country withdrew from Iraq 3 years ago.
Yes, but now we're back sending airstrikes.
Are these airstrikes limited or unlimited?
What's the difference?
No difference, but limited sounds better.
How do you limit an airstrike?
I don't know, sir. How do you mend a broken heart? How do you stop the rain from falling down?
Are you being facetious?
No, I'm being officious. What is the timetable for your limited airstrikes?
They will take months.
Okay, you have limited airstrikes with an unlimited timetable. Yep, you've got a war.
That's what I thought, but my country doesn't seem to notice.
They're probably distracted. Are there any other wars going on? Reality TV?
Well, there is the fighting in Gaza. And on Big Brother, there's a lot of palpable tension between Frankie and the beast mode cowboy.
There you go. Why don't you just give it time? Tragedy plus time equals war.
I thought tragedy plus time equaled comedy.
True. But war plus comedy equals MASH.
What does that have to do with anything?
That was an 11-year sitcom about a 3-year war that was never declared.
So you're saying I should just shut up and enjoy our limited/unlimited non-war war, because eventually, with the right cast and writing staff, it'll be funny?
Sir, I'd love to discuss your quagmire further, but you need to take it up with the military-industrial Instagram photo BuzzFeed quiz cat video complex. Next!
Hi, this is Tony Hedra. As you probably know, August 2014 is the centenary of the outbreak of the 1914-18 conflict known in Europe as the Great War. It didn't become known as World War I, of course, until we'd managed another World War, which only goes to show George Santayana was right, and we're probably in for a few more World Wars before the series is cancelled. World War I was a holocaust for the working classes of Europe and Russia. Between the two sides, roughly 15 to 16 million able-bodied men were killed in combat, died as prisoners, or went missing in action. From all over the map, they were dragged off the land and out of their factories, offices, shops, and workshops, dumped down in a gigantic mud pit in northern France and Belgium, and told to charge the enemy lines, as soldiers had for two centuries. Big difference now, both sides had shiny new 20th century weapons, like machine guns, tanks, long-range artillery, grenades, fragmentation bombs, submarines, chemical WMDs. So-called battles became scenes of unimaginable carnage, as tens of thousands of sons, brothers, lovers, and husbands on both sides were obliterated in rolling mists of blood, flesh, and bone in a matter of hours. If one side managed to move its lines a few inches forward, literally, it was declared a glorious victory. Behind this madness on both sides were commanders who had grown lazy and arrogant over the previous half century, slaughtering indigenous peoples armed with pre-industrial weapons all over the planet. They also tended to be from the upper classes of their respective societies, subscribing to a vicious pan-European class system which regarded anyone who worked with their hands as inferior, dim-witted, and expendable. When it was all over and the victorious British confronted their losses, over a million of their sons, brothers, lovers, and husbands dead and missing, people had to find some good in the vast bloodbath, however futile it had been. Everyone, dead or alive, was a hero. It had been a war that would end all wars. No one was interested in investigating the lunatic callousness of the British commanders, least of all top dog Douglas Haig, a privileged pig-headed monomaniac who'd sent 500,000 young Brits to their deaths, and in the process so weakened his own forces that he almost lost the war. Haig was the Donald Rumsfeld of World War I. As psychopathically incapable of acknowledging responsibility for the horrors he'd caused, and as unlikely to be held accountable for them. Far from bringing him to justice, laws were passed which sealed for 50 years military records of the atrocities British commanders had perpetrated on their own men. Any dissent from the official version was stamped out or poo-pooed into silence. This positive view of the Great War persisted, and as its horrors receded, even amplified. When World War II came along, it became both less remarkable and helped confirm the pathetic conviction that Britain would always prevail. All that changed in the late 50s and early 60s as the US-led race to World War III met massive and noisy resistance from Europe, which had already endured two of them. The anti-war movement in Britain was led by CND, the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. CND didn't accomplish much politically, but it did highlight the new lunacy of techno-war, in which as many humans as had died in an entire world war might now die in the first nuclear exchange. Satirists took notice. The legendary British review Beyond the Fringe in 1960 included two significant hilarious sketches. One satirized the absurdities of civil defense drills and measures in the event of nuclear attack, the British equivalent of duck and cover. The other took aim at the sentimental myths that had grown up about British sang-froid and tenacity in World War II. World wars were now satirical fair game. At the same time, in the East End of London, a commune of improvisational actors called the Theatre Workshop had established themselves in the once derelict Theatre Royal. The Theatre Workshop was founded by Joan Littlewood, an unapologetic left-wing provocateur and a director of genius. She was given a collection of World War I songs, bitter, sardonic, and often funny, which had been popular in the trenches among the British rank and file. The authentic words and voices of those expendable millions whom Haig and his generals had so blithely sent to their deaths. With these songs to bind it together, Littlewood and her company began improvising a satirical musical that would rip the lid off the sanctified image of World War I and present its true horror, cynicism, and brutality from the point of view of the guys who actually had to do the killing and dying. It was called Oh, What a Lovely War.
Oh, 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 it's a lovely war.
Oh, What a Lovely War was a perky music hall, or burlesque revue, popular in Britain during World War I. It involved the audience as much as possible and followed the progress of the war from 1914 on with sketches and numbers about every aspect of it. The core cast were in period Pierrot costumes, which gave it a macabre jollity full of pep and patriotism and toe-tapping dance numbers, but over the proscenium was a running readout of the horrific figures that were beginning to come to light, such as the number of men who were killed on the first day of the Battle of the Somme, 58,000. The one that's always stuck in my mind from the night I saw it in 1963 was Average Life of a Machine Gunner on the Western Front, 4 minutes. But it was the songs that made the show so memorable. First, of course, there was the recruiting song.
We watched you playing cricket and every kind of game. At football, golf and polo, you men have made your name. But now your country calls you to play your part in war. And no matter what befalls you, we shall love you all the more. So come and join the forces as your fathers did before. Oh, we don't want to lose you, but we think you ought to go. For your king and your country both need you so. We shall want you and miss you, but with all our might and main, we shall cheer you, thank you, kiss you when you come back again.
Attention. The outlook isn't healthy, you'll admit. But I have a perfect dream of a new recruiting scheme, which I think is absolutely it. If only other girls would do as I do, I believe that we could manage it alone. For I turn all suitors from me, but the sailor and the Tommy. I've an army and a navy of my own. On Sunday, I walk out with the soldier. Monday, I'm taken by a tar. Tuesday, I'm out with a baby boy scout. On Wednesday, ah, huzzah! On Thursday, I gang out with a Scotty. On Friday, the captain of the crew. But on Saturday, I'm willing, if you'll only take the shilling, to make a man of any one of you.
And as soon as the recruits have been conned into volunteering, they get an immediate taste of what life is going to be like from a sadistic sergeant major, and soon discover the reality of battle. Like several World War I popular songs, this is a parody of the famous hymn Onward Christian Soldiers. Blessing Battles, indeed, was a big part of World War I, as one of the sketches illustrated.
The choir will now sing What a Friend We Have in Jesus as we offer a silent prayer for success in tomorrow's onslaught. Amen.
But as the mountains of dead grow, the average Tommy's job is not just digging trenches, but digging mass graves for his mates who didn't make it. And given the life of horror in the trenches, maybe being in the grave isn't such a bad place to be.
Oh, what?
The bells of hell go ting-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me. And the little devils come, they sing-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me. Oh, death, where is thy sting-a-ling-a-ling? Oh, grave, thy victory. The bells of hell go ting-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me.
One of the supposedly heartwarming occurrences of the Great War was the so-called Christmas Truce in 1914, when the two sides in the trenches called a halt to the hostilities and supposedly shared German schnapps in no man's land. Joan Littlewood was having none of this sentimental hogwash.
It was Christmas Day in the cookhouse, the happiest day of the year. Men's hearts were full of gladness and their bellies full of beer. When up spoke Private Shorthouse, his face as bold as brass, saying, "We don't want your Christmas pudding, you can stick it up your
tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy."
It was Christmas Day in the Arim. The eunuchs were standing round, and hundreds of beautiful women were stretched out on the ground. When in came the bold bad sultan, and gazed on his marble halls, saying, "What do you want for Christmas, boys?" And the eunuchs answered,
"Tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy."
Bravo, Tommy! English cows is very beautiful! Hey, Tommy! Hey! Are you still there?
Yeah! Yeah.
You drink with us! Yeah?
Yeah!
You like some good Deutschen Schnaps?
That's whiskey!
Yay! Yeah. Swing it over!
Tomorrow we meet you in the middle.
Aye, the middle of Piccadilly.
It's funny to hear them speaking English.
Yeah, well, they learned it all at school, didn't they? See you in the penalty area. Happy Christmas!
Happy Christmas!
Good night, Jerry.
The war winds to its ineluctable conclusion, victory, but the mood in the trenches mirrors neither the elation at home nor the accolades that commanders can look forward to.
Granny? Granny, what did Daddy do in the war?
And when they ask us how dangerous it was, oh, we'll never tell.
Going to ask us.
was an enormous hit. It moved to Broadway the next year, 1964, and it changed not only people's perception of World War I, it made a lot of the people it was supposed to make mad apoplectic. Sure enough, when it was revived in London this year, a feckless right-wing ass called Michael Gove, Conservative Education Secretary, a British version of Paul Ryan, was quoted thusly, "Oh, what a lovely war! Denigrates the patriotism and courage of ordinary British soldiers in World War I." Well, no. The show denigrates thugs like Gove, who are still ready in the name of patriotism and courage to send ordinary people off to kill and be killed. That's how World War III, which many conservatives, most Republicans, and a lot of the U.S. military command, especially the Baptists, think is way overdue, will come about. And perhaps that's inevitable. It might even be a good thing. It might even solve all the planet's most pressing problems, just like the first two did. This has been Tony Hendra for Oh, What a Lovely War.
I love people. That's why I like to shoot them. Hi, I'm Officer Name Withheld for Legal Reasons. If you're looking for a vacation packed with adventure and human rights violations, why not try Ferguson, Missouri? Here in America's favorite war zone, you can experience life the old-fashioned way, before civil rights, the First Amendment, and disapproval at shooting teenagers. In our little hamlet, you can't say what you want, but with all the tear gas, you won't be able to. And if you don't like the way we treat you, just hold your hands up over your head and see what happens. Missouri has gone from the show-me state to the blow-me-away state. In Ferguson, we can't promise that all of you will be shot six times in the torso and the head, just those of you who seem black or otherwise African-American. If you're looking for a Civil War reenactment, go to the South. But if you're looking for a real U.S. war that's not even civil, come to the Middle East or the Middle West. Hey, tourists, over here.
Ferguson Vacation Packages. Ask your travel agent how to avoid getting killed.
And now, the human side of terrorism.
Are you there, Allah? It's me, Mohammed. Things have been on the rocks between me and my third wife lately. I don't know if it's me or if she's going through that teenage rebellion. Not to get all sentimental on you, Allah, but she was the first girl I ever raped. Please help me. I mean, us. Get that excitement back.
Coming this fall from all three networks, it's Coppophilia, yet another searing drama about Americans' crazy, doomed, but unending love affair with cops. James Franco stars as Officer Lou Stiggy Stiglitz, yet another bipolar, sociopathic, trigger-happy, but always endearing cop who strews bullet-riddled corpses, ruined lives, and routine injustices in his wake the way a snake sheds skins, and always comes out smelling like an endearingly battered, week-old rose.
Hey, officer, how can I have a career in law enforcement?
Get your hands on the car, you fucking dirtbag. What you got in your pocket? A fucking gun? He's got a fucking gun!
No! You put it there! Ah! Mommy! Mommy!
Good job, Stiggy. Keep these numbers up, you'll make lieutenant.
Like you say, Captain, forget the law. It's all about enforcement.
Coppophilia, the series that brings you the heartwarming inside story of the brave men and occasional deluded female who 24/7, 365 are ready and willing to put their lives on the line for one another.
I saw you plant that gun on the kids, Diggy. I'm going to IA.
Tell you how it works, Cadet Cody. One of us kills a perp, sugar. We all kill the motherfucker. Ever hear about the one rotten apple in the barrel?
Yeah, and you're it.
That ain't the way it is, sweetie. One good apple in the barrel spoils it for the rest of us apples. One good apple in the barrel is a fucking rat.
Jesus, you just shot her in cold blood.
Uh-uh, motherfucker. You did.
Copophilia, the show that brings you the enduring truth that any police force in any society embodies the darkest, cruelest, and stupidest prejudices that society harbors and whitewashes them so clean, you love those boys and babes in blue.
Excuse me, officer. Can you tell me the way to the Statue of Liberty?
I'm eating. Go fuck yourself.
You know, you people are the same everywhere. Back home, we call you lot the filth.
Get your fucking hands in the car, you limey faggot. What do you got in your pocket?
Probably the gun you're about to put there. Bobby!
Copophilia, yet another exciting, engrossing telenarcotic series from yet another Craven network that brings you yet another flawed but lovable version of your own collective lizard brain. Cops, you gotta love them on Copophilia.
New for 2014, the Ford Dodge Heavy 2-ton Hump Truck. Hump the forest. Hump those wildlife. Hump the planet. Guzzle that gas. Hump the global warming pussies. Hump that pussy cyclist.
Remember, speed kills.
Guaranteed to enlarge the average penis 4 to 6 inches. So you can hump the whole wide world. Hump those losers. Show your buddies who's boss.
Please drink responsibly. Do not attempt this maneuver.
The Ford Dodge Heavy 1-ton hump truck. You want one. You know you want one.
No human male should be allowed to operate this vehicle.
Call your tri-state Ford Dodge Heavy dealer. Do it now.
Ford Dodge Heavy is not liable for injury or fatality purchasers of this vehicle inflicted on themselves or others. Manufacturer is aware of conclusive research showing cars and trucks to be the single most stupid and lethal form of mass transportation, causing death, acute death, sudden death, slow lingering death, death by water, fire, ice, cliff, tree, and road rage, amputation, brain damage, limb loss, head loss, child loss, organ failure, quadriplegia, obesity, asthma, 48 forms of terminal cancer, acute pedestrian fatality, eco-Armageddon, intergalactic greenhouse gas effect, and bourgeois complacency. But manufacturers will have no liability for the effects of operating this vehicle on or off roads, bridges, tunnels, dead ends, beaches, rivers, lakes, outside or inside malls, supermarkets, box stores, hotels, banks, restaurants, churches, temples, casinos, schools, daycare centers, or saloons.
You own a lethal weapon. Now drive a lethal weapon.
Oh my God! Please, slow down!
Out of my way, pussy!
The Final Edition Radio Hour is performed at one time or another by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Kevin Janis, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, Rachel Rauch, Steve Rosenfield, Anne Tuchel, and Darby Worley. The Final Edition Radio Hour is written, at one time or another, by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Jeff Chrysler, David Eskridge, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, and Steve Rosenfield. The Final Edition Radio Hour is produced by Tony Hindra and Jeff Chrysler. West Coast producer Barry Lank. The Final Edition Radio Hour is edited and audio produced by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. This episode's audio engineer was Eric West. The Final Edition Radio Hour is the property of the Final Edition LLC, copyright 2014.